Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is the Midland Reporter Telegram Weekend Edition for Saturday, January 17th, 2026. Oilfield services jobs slipped in 2025. Drop comes amid weak prices, uncertainty. Oilfield service companies marked 2025 as a year of workforce adjustment and market uncertainty amid weakened oil prices and a continued slump in oilfield activity. In its December 2025 jobs report, Energy Workforce and Technology Council said National Energy Services employment totaled 629,372 jobs in December, a decline of 184 positions from November. According to preliminary data from the Bureau of Labor Statistics and Energy Workforce Analysis, employment began 2025 at 636,164 and peaked at 640,001 jobs in April, before slowly trending downward through much of the second half of the year. By year's end, energy services employment stood approximately 11,000 jobs below its spring high. Even with this decline, employment levels remained relatively stable compared to prior industry downturns. Year over year, the energy services sector experienced an average employment decline of approximately 2.3% compared to 2024. This change reflects the difference between average monthly employment in 2025 and the average for 2024 amid ongoing challenges in the operating environment shaped by market uncertainty, tariffs, and rising costs. Quote, 2025 tested the OFS sector's workforce's resilience, end quote, said Energy Workforce President Molly Dieterman. Quote, market uncertainty, tariffs, permitting delays, and inconsistent data reporting added complexity to planning and hiring, end quote. Despite the challenges, Dieterman emphasized the sector's long-term outlook. Throughout 2025, she said, quote, energy services companies adjusted by prioritizing efficiency, pacing hiring, and focusing on retaining and upskilling their workforce. Many firms emphasized operational discipline and targeted investment over rapid expansion, which helped maintain stability in a challenging environment, end quote. Midland drainage fees going up 145%. The forthcoming increase in drainage fees has been causing immense frustration among Midlanders. Now, the City of Midland has released a sheet on social media detailing what rate increases Midlanders can expect ahead of the fee going into effect on February 1st. Quote, like many cities across Texas, Midland has had a drainage fee in place since 2018, end quote, the city said in the social media post. Quote, this fee helps support major long-term drainage improvements across our city, and it hasn't increased since it was first introduced nearly 8 years ago, end quote. Rates will be increasing 145% across the board. There are residential and commercial categories that are broken down by tier, which is based off of square footage. Residential monthly drainage fee rates are as follows. Tier 1, less than 1,400 square feet, $2.94 up from $1.20. Tier 2, 1,400 to 2,424 square feet, $4.90 up from $2. Tier 3, 2,425 square feet or greater, $8.33 up from $3.40. Commercial monthly drainage fees are as follows. Tier 1, less than 8,340 square feet, $14.21 up from $5.80. Tier 2, 8,340 to 18,702 square feet, $31.85 up from $13. Tier 3, 18,703 to 47,853 square feet, $73.50 up from $30. Tier 4, 47,854 to 92,740 square feet, $167.58 up from $68.40. Tier 5, 92,741 to 261,475 square feet, $377.30 up from $154. Tier 6, 261,476 square feet or greater, $539 up from $220. City Council recognizes National School Choice Week. January 25th through 31st is National School Choice Week, dedicated to the practice of the government providing assistance to those seeking education opportunities outside of the traditional public school system. To commemorate this, Midland City Council offered a proclamation to teachers and students from Midland Academy Charter School at its first meeting of 2026. Quote, all children in Midland should have access to the highest quality education, and Midland Academy Charter School recognizes the important role that an effective education plays, preparing all students to become successful adults, end quote. Councilman Brian Stubbs read from the proclamation. Quote, Midland is home to a multitude of high-quality traditional public schools, public magnet schools, public charter schools, and private schools for which parents can choose from for their children, as well as many dedicated teachers, professionals in traditional public schools who are committed to educating our children. Educational variety not only helps the diversity of our economy, but also enhances the viability of our community, end quote. Midland Academy Charter School serves students in kindergarten through eighth grade. City Council celebrates Midland's Merry Lights Parade Float winners. The City of Midland gave out awards to each of the winners of Midland's second annual Christmas Parade at the first Midland City Council meeting of 2026. Held December 13th as part of the Midland Merry Lights celebration, each of the winners was gifted a trophy by Mayor Lori Blong and Councilman John Norman. Participants and onlookers enjoyed 98 festive floats, community performances, and an appearance from Santa Claus. Additionally, food trucks, vendors, and other attractions set up in Wadley Barron Park near the Duck Pond. Crowds of people lined the streets along North A Street to catch a view of the parade. The route began at Woodlands Park and ran down A Street to Midland High School. The awards and their winners in presentation order were as follows. Best Band, Alamo Scout Band. Most Spirit, Sol Ross State University's Permian Basin Alumni Chapter. Most Spirit, Midland College Aggie Club. Best Group, Rex Oilfield Services. Most Creative, second place, San Miguel Archangel Youth Group. Most Creative, first place, Fat Boys Productions. Third place overall, The Cycle Bar. Second place overall, Billy Black HVAC. First place overall, HEB. City Council votes to appoint four new MDC board members. Midland City Council this week held a third round of interviews for positions on the Midland Development Corp Board and voted on their picks. Hayden Boldrick was the lone candidate interviewed Tuesday. Quote, I'm really proud to say that I'm a fifth-generation Midlander, end quote, Boldrick said. Quote, I was named after my great-great-grandfather who brought us down here on a literal wagon, end quote. After receiving bachelor's and master's degrees at the University of Texas at Austin, Boldrick returned to Midland for work. Since 2023, he has served as a business development landman and an acquisitions manager for Waterloo Resources, LLC. He also serves as the board director for the Midland chapter of Young Professional in Energy. Quote, MDC has always really interested me because since I came back from college, Midland has really grown a lot and it's really improved a lot, end quote, said Boldrick. Quote, I see MDC as being the main driver of that change, end quote. Boldrick said he hoped to work within the MDC's tax constraints to bring smaller quality of life improvements to Midland, such as restaurants and park improvements. He also said that his main focus would be improving downtown, which he believes should be, quote, the community center of West Texas, period, end quote, while also praising the current MDC initiatives that have happened, that have been happening here. He also touted continued support of local oil and gas businesses, especially in the wake of potential layoffs, and suggested partnerships with colleges in the area to help with homegrown recruitment. Quote, I think a great thing for the public sector to do is target projects that do have a return on investment. And MDC has done a lot of those, end quote, Boldrick said. Quote, that's a great way because it recycles the cash flow so you don't have to go back to the taxpayers. That's where government comes in to provide something that really just boosts something that benefits all the citizens, end quote. Voting results. After Boldrick's interview, City Council held a vote. Candidates who received four votes were elected to the MDC board. Four candidates received four or more votes. Boldrick, 4. Denzel West, 4. Abraham Behill, 5. And Darpin Bakta, 5. As the vote was done on paper slips, it is unknown which City Council members voted for which candidates. Behill, Bakta, and Boldrick will each serve a full 3-year term. West, meanwhile, will take over for J. Ross Lacey following Lacey's departure, as West only received 4 votes following a second vote with the remaining candidates. Midland County Livestock Show marks 74th year. the Midland County Livestock Show has taken over the Horseshoe Arena for its 74th anniversary, showcasing 485 animals, including the best lambs, goats, swine, rabbits, chickens, and cattle. The Livestock Show began Monday and concludes Saturday with an auction sale and awards ceremony. Brandon Mitchell, president of the Midland County Livestock Association, said the event gives kids the opportunity to showcase their projects and prepare for the bigger shows that will start soon. Quote, this is a great place for these kids to practice and get prepared for state and national competitions. This is the start of what we call our big shows. From here, they'll go into state shows and then some will move on to national shows, end quote. Children who participate in the livestock show are from Midland County and are involved in 4-H and FFA. The competition is open to local students in third grade through their senior year. While the show only includes local students, it is one of the toughest competitions, according to Mitchell. Quote, Midland County is one of the toughest county competitions in the state of Texas. When you have success at the Midland County Show, you've really done something, end quote. Mitchell added that there is also a Pee-wee category, which allows younger kids to practice and learn the ins and outs of livestock shows before they get to third grade. Quote, they're not eligible for certain aspects of the competition, but they at least get to participate, and we encourage them to stay involved in it, end quote, he said. Quote, many of the kids in this room started when they were very young. For instance, my daughter started when she was 6 years old, and now she's a graduating senior, end quote. Being involved in livestock showing teaches children a certain kind of responsibility, Mitchell said. Quote, this is a different responsibility than taking out the trash or feeding your dog or your pet goldfish. They have a life depending on them. It's hard to put into words the impact that it makes, end quote. He added that one of the highlights of being involved in the Livestock Association is seeing how kids grow up and build responsibility and values. Quote, these kids are contributing to our society and our community. They are learning core values, responsibility, and so much more, end quote. Students spend a lot of time caring for their show animals, and the livestock show is one way to showcase their hard work. Quote, seeing the pride that these kids feel when they have success and seeing the pride they have in themselves and their projects is awesome, end quote, Mitchell said, adding that one of the highlights was when a kid was showing for the first time ever and won his class and first place ribbon in the county. On Saturday, the livestock show will conclude with an auction sale. However, this won't be like a traditional sale. Quote, our community can come out and buy an animal in the auction, but when they buy that animal, they don't actually leave with it, end quote, Mitchell explained. Quote, they are basically just donating the money to the kid, end quote. Showing animals is very expensive for children to become involved in, which is why they depend on community support and financial support. Mitchell said that many children use the money they win through the show to finance their project for the next year, to help travel to state and national shows, and for higher education. Quote, we have several generous sponsors that take care of our kids financially. The community support and local businesses' support are very important because it helps support these kids to do what they do, end quote. If guests are unable to attend the show, they can tune in to a live stream of the event on the Stock Show channel. Those unable to attend the auction can find the auction and donate on www.stockshowauctions.com. Mitchell encourages any children who want to be involved in livestock shows to contact the Midland County 4-H office or the Midland County Livestock Association for more information. TSA to charge $45 to verify ID for travelers without real ID starting February 1st. Travelers planning flights in the coming weeks may want to double-check their wallets now. The clock is ticking for travelers who still don't have a real ID. Beginning February 1st, the Transportation Security Administration will require anyone without an acceptable form of identification to either present valid credentials or pay $45 to complete the agency's confirm.id identity verification process in order to fly. TSA says the process will vary by airport and strongly recommends travelers pay the fee online in advance, warning that on-site processing could significantly slow security lines. Acceptable forms of ID include real ID compliant driver's licenses or other state photo identity cards issued by the Department of Motor Vehicles or equivalent. If you are not sure if your ID complies with real ID, check with your state Department of Motor Vehicles. A temporary driver's license is not an acceptable form of identification. State issued enhanced driver's license or enhanced ID, U.S. passport, U.S. passport card, DHS trusted traveler's cards, Global Entry Nexus Sentry Fast. U.S. Department of Defense ID, including IDs issued to dependents. Permanent residence card, border crossing card. An acceptable photo ID issued by a federally recognized tribal nation / Indian tribe, including enhanced tribal cards. HSPD-12 PIV card. Foreign government issued passport. Canadian provincial driver's license or Indian and Northern Affairs Canada card. Transportation worker identification credential. U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services Employment Authorization Card, I-766. U.S. Merchant Mariner Credential, Veteran Health Identification Card. Starting May 7, 2025, the Real ID Law was implemented, where all travelers need an acceptable form of ID. Real ID came from an act passed by Congress in 2005, following a recommendation from the 9/11 Commission to create nationwide security standards for state-issued identification documents. 94% of passengers already have their Real ID or another form of acceptable identification, TSA reported. Quote, identity verification is essential to traveler safety, end quote, said Adam Stahl, senior official performing the duties of deputy administrator for TSA. Quote, beginning February 1st, travelers who do not present an acceptable form of ID at our security checkpoints and still want to fly can pay a $45 fee and undergo the TSA Confirm.ID process. The security of the traveling public is our top priority, end quote. TSA continues to urge travelers to obtain a Real ID or carry another acceptable form of identification to avoid delays. The policy takes effect February 1st. Oil Report, ExxonMobil. Pipeline construction reaches 18-year high. Driven by natural gas, data center demand. Rising demand for natural gas is sending pipeline construction to a level not seen since 2008. According to Morningstar DBRS, there are 12 projects for new and expanded natural gas pipelines set to be completed in 2026 in Texas, Louisiana, and Oklahoma. Added combined capacity from these projects will be approximately 18 billion cubic feet per day, BCF/D, which exceeds Canada's total daily natural gas consumption. The added capacity is also the highest since 2008, when 31 BCF/D was added. These projects are also justified by strong growth, some 20% year-over-year between 2014 and 2024, of associated gas production from the Permian Basin. In fact, some 65% of that new capacity will come from four major projects in the Permian: the Apex, Blackcomb Pipeline, Blackfin Pipeline, and Hugh Brinson Pipeline, with a combined capacity of 11.7 BCF/D. The long-term outlook for production is robust and growing due to liquefied natural gas exports and power demand driven by data centers and potentially greater reshoring of U.S. manufacturing, said Nima Bilyeu, Assistant Vice President of Energy, Utilities, and Natural Resources at Morningstar DBRS. Speaking with the reporter Telegram, Bilyeu said that robust production and demand should lower the probability of an overbuild in pipelines. Quote, in just dry gas alone, the Energy Information Administration said dry gas production is set to increase by 1.7% to 2.4% on a compound annual basis from 38.4 trillion cubic feet in 2024 to between 42.6 and 44.3 TCF in 2030. This is consistent growth, and the real kicker is that this is just dry gas production, end quote, he said. Natural gas production associated with oil production in the three largest tight oil producing plays, the Permian, Eagle Ford, and Bakken, is also rising, he said. Not only that, but the gas oil ratio is rising as well. In 2024, natural gas comprised 40% of total production from the three plays compared to 29% in 2014. Quote, that increase in gas production from the Permian, Eagle Ford, and Bakken is why you need natural gas infrastructure, end quote, he said. USGS, more oil, gas recoverable in Woodford and Barnett shales. A new assessment of Woodford and Barnett shales in the Permian Basin show operators' exploration of these new benches is justified. The U.S. Geological Survey released its assessment of undiscovered gas and oil in the shales. finding their technically recoverable resources of 28.3 trillion cubic feet of gas, enough to supply the United States for 10 months at the current rate of consumption, and 1.6 billion barrels of oil, or 10 weeks' supply for the nation. There is also 813 million barrels of natural gas liquids. Those are resources recoverable using current technology. USGS previously assessed the Woodford and Barnett shales in 2007. In 2007, the USGS assessed the oil resource potential of the shales, said Andrea Cicero, a geologist with the survey's Central Energy Resources Science Center and a member of the Permian Basin Province assessment team that conducted the assessment. At the time, she told the Reporter Telegram there were only a handful of wells producing from the two reservoirs. Quote, initial activity in the Toya Field region proved that the Barnett and Woodford shales were viable sources of gas, but there were other formations that were shallower and more prospective to pursue first, such as the Wolf Camp, end quote, she said. With the success of horizontal drilling and hydraulic fracturing in the Alpine High Field starting around 2015, industry took notice and began exploring for Woodford and Barnett in other areas, such as the Central Basin Platform and most recently the Midland Basin, she continued. The additional well and production data that became available since 2007 informed the survey's geologic analysis, resulting in defining new assessment units and ultimately updating its estimates for total undiscovered resources. Quote, there's still a lot of Wolf Camp and Bone Spring to be drilled, end quote, she said, noting that operators tend to explore shallower depths first. The organic-rich shales of the Woodford and Barnett occur up to 20,000 feet below the surface at greater depths than other resources in the Permian. Since production began in the late 1990s, the Woodford and Barnett shales have produced 26 million barrels of oil, equal to one day's U.S. consumption. For the study, the USGS defined 9 total assessment units, AUs, 4 continuous AUs and 1 conventional AU for the Woodford shale and 4 continuous AUs for the Barnett shale. Quote, my analysis is strictly geological, an assessment of what is likely present and technically recoverable today. Industry needs to make the hard judgment of where to explore first. As Permian Basin operators look to expand their inventory, their assessment provides a better understanding of the total amount of undiscovered resources that remain in the Woodford and Barnett shales, end quote, Cicero said. Milestone Acquisition doubles its New Mexico presence. Milestone Environmental has significantly expanded its footprint with a new acquisition. The company announced the acquisition of the Stryker Slurry Injection Facility in Lee County, New Mexico. This is the second of Milestone's 15 facilities to be located in New Mexico. Quote, this doubles our capacity in New Mexico. That's important to us, end quote, said Gabriel Rio, Milestone president and chief executive officer. Quote, that's important to us, end quote. Stryker brings with it advanced oil reclamation technology that the company can leverage across the broader Milestone network, he told the Reporter Telegram. The facility is designed to accept all RCRA-exempt energy waste streams. Like all Milestone facilities, Stryker utilizes an advanced injection process to permanently isolate waste thousands of feet underground, preventing environmental contamination and supporting customers' sustainability goals. This process will be upgraded in the coming months to align with Milestone's patented slurry injection technology. The facility's sophisticated oil reclamation technology also maximizes resource recovery, aligning with sustainable practices. A lot of the tank bottoms contain a lot of crude oil, Rio explained, and any opportunity to recover that oil and sell it is better economically and environmentally. The oil recovered utilizing Stryker's advanced reclamation technology will be recycled and sold, he said. He said Milestone built its first New Mexico facility 3 or 4 years ago and finds the state had a more difficult regulatory environment that was slower to issue permits and slower to amend them as needed. Quote, our technology was new to the state, and it took several years to get the permits we needed, end quote, he said. Quote, on the positive side, the geology is so good, our customers are as busy as can be. That's driven by geology, not government, end quote. Rio acknowledged that Milestone is among the energy companies affected by the industry's down cycle, driven by low oil prices and low activity levels. Milestone's customers have consolidated and gotten bigger, and as a result, look for vendors with the scale to meet their needs, he said. Energy and oil field waste management is Milestone's focus, and Rio said the company will continue to enhance oil recovery, take on more types of waste, and look for opportunities to consolidate. But growth will come from industrial waste management, he said. Independence Power becomes public reporting company after merger. Independence Power Holdings, Inc. this week transitioned to a public reporting company following the successful completion of its business combination with Tri-Unity Business Services Limited. With the transition complete, the company will focus on addressing the critical energy gap in the Permian Basin. Independence Power deploys behind-the-meter microgrids in the form of battery energy storage systems, or, quote, BESS, end quote, that function as private on-site power stations. The Permian Basin is currently outgrowing its regional power grid, according to a comprehensive demand forecast conducted by S&P Global for the Texas Energy Grid Operator Energy Reliability Council of Texas. The Permian Basin is currently grappling with a power shortfall of 8 to 13 gigawatts. This gap creates, quote, dirty power, end quote, voltage sags and surges that frequently crash industrial computers and damage high-value equipment. With 241 megawatts of energized utility-scale batteries already under management, Independence Power's proprietary software acts as a, quote, shock absorber, end quote, to stabilize power. The setup is designed to ensure the near-perfect power quality needed for both upstream oil production and high-density AI data centers co-located at the source. And because they are behind the meter, these systems bypass the 30-month interconnection delays often seen with traditional grid power. Independence system also enables capturing natural gas produced as a byproduct of oil drilling and converting it into low-cost electricity right at the source. Founder David J. Durrett devised an asset-light business model, seeking to generate high-margin recurring revenue as a power-as-a-service, PaaS, provider. Quote, our proprietary software was born in the desert to solve the most difficult power challenges in the oil patch, end quote, said Todd Parkin, chief executive officer, in a statement. Quote, by pairing this technology with our customers' 241 MW battery fleet, we are providing the stable recurring energy backbone for both oil field productivity and the AI revolution, end quote. Life Tributes, Andrew Elvin Reed, 10-7-1945 to 11-25-2025. Andy Reed, Andrew Elvin, was called to heaven on November 25, 2025 in Katy, Texas. He was born October 7, 1945 in Jacksonville, Texas, to Jewel Elvin Reed and Eudoxia Dot Reed. Andy was preceded in death by his father, Jewel Elvin Reed, mother Eudoxia Dot Reed, and sister Martha Elizabeth Sue Reed. He is survived by his wife of 58 years, Jan Bostick Reed, of Katy, Texas, formerly Midland, Texas, his daughter Marianne Reed Giles, and grandsons Reed and Ryder, of Spring, Texas, his son Andrew R. Rusty Reed, and wife Michelle, and grandchildren Fisher of College Station, Texas, Emma and Cole of Katy, Texas, and his son Robert T. Reed and wife Christy, and granddaughters Carter, Brooklyn, and Blake of Fulshear, Texas. A celebration of life will be Saturday, January 24th, 2026, from 2 o'clock to 4 o'clock p.m. at La Bodega, 2700 North Big Spring Street, Midland, Texas, 79705. A graveside service is scheduled for Monday, January 26th, 2026, at 11 o'clock a.m. at Earl's Chapel Cemetery, 436 County Road, 3221, Jacksonville, Texas, 75766. In lieu of flowers, the family has established a memorial website honoring Andy Reed and the quiet, steadfast battle he fought as he lovingly supported his wife through Alzheimer's. We invite you to visit, share memories, and consider contributing to support Alzheimer's awareness and research in his honor. https://events.alz.org/fundraisers/Marianne Giles. Mary Caroline Barr Wills, 9-10-1944 to 1-8-2026. Mary Caroline Barr Wills passed away on Thursday, January 8, 2026, at the age of 81 at Helen Greathouse Manor,
assisted living in Midland, Texas. Mary was born in Spring Hill, Louisiana on September 10, 1944, to Robert Everett Barr and Annie Louise Broom Barr. She is survived by two stepdaughters and spouses, Angie and Mark Walker of Midland, Texas, and Shay and Kevin Sanders of Midlothian, Texas. Six step-grandchildren and spouses, Martin and Katie Pfeiffer of Midland, Texas, Grayson and Cody Ware, Caden and Jaylee Weaver of Burleson, Texas, Paxton Wills of Midlothian, Texas, Sydney Walker of Midland, Texas, and Jamie Walker of Lubbock, Texas. Six step-great-grandsons, niece Jessamine Caroline Stidham of Baton Rouge, Louisiana, nephew and spouse Robert and Tracy Dean of Edgewood, Texas, great-niece Caroline Stidham and great-nephew Jackson Stidham of Baton Rouge, Louisiana. A celebration of life will be held later in Fredericksburg, Texas. A graveside service will be held later at Lawn Haven Memorial Gardens in San Angelo, Texas, with family. We ask that memorials be given in her memory to Helen Greathouse Manor, the Village at Manor Park, in Midland, Texas, Alzheimer's Association, West Texas Chapter, Home Hospice in Midland, Texas, or a charity of one's choice. Cremation arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Joe Philip Liberty, 8-7-1937 to 1-2-2026. Joe Philip Liberty died at home on January 2, 2026. He was born in Big Spring, Texas on August 7, 1937, and grew up living on the family's cotton farm near Ackerley, Texas. Joe is preceded in death by his father, Gerald Liberty, parents Jean and Elmer Dyer, and wife Nancy K. Liberty. Joe is survived by his sister, Linda K. Dyer, sister-in-law, Sarah K. Webb, and husband, Tom. Joe's two sons are Todd Liberty and wife Martha, Blake Liberty and wife Chris, and a niece, Carrie Kent. Joe has five grandchildren that he loved trying to keep track of: Beth Avery and husband Trevor, Rachel Liberty and husband Dustin Fairbrook, Chris Zeka and husband Hank, Jaden Liberty and Joseph Liberty. There is also Joe's great-nephew Jeff Webb and wife Lisa, great-niece Julie Kinlaw and husband Riley. The line continues so far with five great-grandchildren: Levi, Cameron, Lucy, Heather, and Luke. Four great-nieces: Nola, Caden, Audrey, Melissa, and four great-nephews: Matthew, Colby, Connor, and Thomas. A celebration of Joe's life will be held at First Methodist Church on Wednesday, January 21st, 2026, at 11 o'clock a.m. That evening, from 5 o'clock to 7 o'clock p.m., the family will host a reception for family and friends to celebrate Joe at the Petroleum Club. Honorary pallbearers are Jim Walton, Clint Hurt, Dan Michael, Alan Jones, Joseph Liberty, and Jeff Webb. In lieu of flowers, please consider a memorial contribution to High Sky Children's Ranch, Midland Memorial Foundation, or the charity of your choice. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Betty Jones Latham, 4-17-1936 to 12-27-2025. Betty passed away in her sleep December 27, 2025, at her home in Victoria, Texas. She was born Betty Jean Dobson to her parents Jesse Daniel Dobson, an oil field worker, and Doris Kathleen Graves in Big Spring, Texas, April 17, 1936, and graduated from Midland High, class of 1954. She was preceded in death by her parents, husband of 55 years, Roland Eugene Jones, and husband of 3 years, George Edward Latham, brother Seymour Daniel Dobson, brother Bobby Dwayne Dobson, daughter Roberta Elaine Kilburn, and great-grandson Noah Lemond. She is survived by her brother James Earl Dobson, sons Richard Eugene Jones and Robert Earl Jones, grandchildren Richard Evan Jones, Eric Kilburn, Tiffany Kilburn Lemond, Rain Jones, and Hunter Jones. Betty decided to donate her body to medical research. There will be a graveside service once cremated remains are returned to family at Fort Sam Houston National Cemetery, San Antonio, Texas, where she will be laid to rest next to Jean. Bridget May Hayes. Bridget May Hayes passed away on January 1st, 2026, at the age of 64. A memorial service will be held at Ellis Funeral Home on Monday, January 26th, 2026, at 10 o'clock a.m. Please visit ellisfunerals.com to leave online condolences. Kelly Jane Cottingham Morris. Kelly Jane Cottingham Morris, 65, of Odessa, died Wednesday, January 14th, 2026, in Odessa, Texas. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements are entrusted to American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory in Midland. James Patillo, 9/10/1942 to 12/28/2025. It is with a heavy heart and great sadness we say goodbye to James L. Jim Patillo of Midland, Texas. He succumbed to a prolonged illness and passed away peacefully in Midland, Texas on December 28, 2025. Jim was born in San Angelo, Texas, September 10, 1942, to Rodney G. Tex Patillo and Mary Barnett Patillo. At Jim's request, there will not be a funeral or memorial service. In a private ceremony, family will scatter his ashes in a horse pasture. He will ride like the wind towards heaven. He is survived by his wife, Jane, his daughter, Paige Walters of Florida, her husband, Joseph, and grandchildren, Kate, Grace, Beck, and Claire. His son, Scott Patillo of Midland, his wife, Carla, and grandchildren, Jake and Madeline. He also leaves behind two great grandchildren, Luke and Layton, and his sister, Jan Holman of Alamogordo, New Mexico. He was a faithful man of God and will be greatly missed.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the oil report of the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Saturday, January 17th. Pipeline construction reaches 18-year high, driven by natural gas data center demand. The story was written by Miller McEwen, oil editor. Rising demand for natural gas is sending pipeline construction to a level not seen since 2008. According to Morningstar DBRS, there are 12 projects for new and expanded natural gas pipelines set to be completed in 2026 in Texas, Louisiana, and Oklahoma. Added combined capacity from these projects will be approximately 18 billion cubic feet per day, which exceeds Canada's total daily natural gas consumption. The added capacity is also the highest since 2008, when 31 BCF per day was added. These projects are also justified by strong growth, some 20% year over year between 2014 and 2024, of associated gas production from the Permian Basin. In fact, some 65% of that new capacity will come from four major projects in the Permian: the Apex, Blackcomb Pipeline, Blackfin Pipeline, and Hugh Brinson Pipeline, with a combined capacity of 11.7 BCF per day. The long-term outlook for production is robust and growing due to liquefied natural gas exports and power demand driven by data centers and potentially greater reshoring of U.S. manufacturing, said Nima Below, Assistant Vice President of Energy, Utilities, and Natural Resources at Morningstar BDRS. Speaking with the Reporter-Telegram, Below said that robust production and demand should lower the probability of an overbuild in pipelines. Quote, "In just dry gas alone, the Energy Information Administration said dry gas production is set to increase by 1.7% to 2.4% on a compound annual basis from 38.4 trillion cubic feet in 2024 to between 42.6 and 44.3 TCF in 2030. this is consistent growth. And the real kicker is that this is just dry production, he said. Natural gas production associated with oil production in the three largest tight oil producing plays, the Permian, Eagle Ford, and Bakken, is also rising, he said. Not only that, but the gas-oil ratio is rising as well. In 2024, natural gas comprised 40% of total production from the three plays, compared to 29% in 2014. Quote, that increasing gas production from the Permian, Eagle Ford, and Bakken is why you need natural gas infrastructure, he said. Milestone Acquisition doubles its New Mexico presence. The story was written by Mella McEwen, oil editor. Milestone Environmental has significantly expanded its footprint with a new acquisition. The company announced the acquisition of the Stryker Slurry Injection Facility in Lee County, New Mexico. This is the second of Milestone's 15 facilities to be located in New Mexico. Quote, this doubles our capacity in New Mexico. That's important to us, said Gabriel Rio, Milestone president and chief executive officer. That's important to us, end quote. Stryker brings with it advanced oil reclamation technology that the company can leverage across the broader Milestone network, he told the reporter Telegram. The facility is designed to accept all RCRA-exempt energy waste streams. Like all Milestone facilities, Stryker utilizes an advanced injection process to permanently isolate waste thousands of feet underground, preventing environmental contamination and supporting customers' sustainability goals. This process will be upgraded in the coming months to align with Milestone's patented slurry injection technology. The facility's sophisticated oil reclamation technology also maximizes resource recovery, aligning with sustainable practices. A lot of the tank bottoms contain a lot of crude oil, Rio explained, and any opportunity to recover that oil and sell it is better economically and environmentally. The oil recovered utilizing Stryker's advanced reclamation technology will be recycled and sold, he said. He said Milestone built its first New Mexico facility 3 or 4 years ago and finds the state had a more difficult regulatory environment that was slower to issue permits and slower to amend them as needed. Quote, our technology was new to the state, and it took several years to get the permits we needed, he said. On the positive side, the geology is so good, our customers are as busy as can be. That's driven by geology, not government, end quote. Rio acknowledged that Milestone is among the energy companies affected by the industry's down cycle, driven by low oil prices and low activity levels. Milestone's customers have consolidated and gotten bigger and, as a result, look for vendors with the scale to meet their needs, he said. Energy and oil field waste management is Milestone's focus, and Rio said the company will continue to enhance oil recovery, take on more types of waste, and look for opportunities to consolidate. But growth will come from industrial waste management, he said. USGS says more oil and gas recoverable in Woodford and Barnett shales. This story was written by Mella McEwen, oil editor. A new assessment of Woodford and Barnett shales in the Permian Basin shows operators' exploration of these new benches is justified. The U.S. Geological Survey released its assessment of undiscovered gas and oil in the shales, finding there are technically recoverable resources of 28.3 trillion cubic feet of gas, enough to supply the United States for 10 months at the current rate of consumption, and 1.6 billion barrels of oil, or 10 weeks' supply for the nation. There is also 813 million barrels of natural gas liquids. Those are resources recoverable using current technology. USGS previously assessed the Woodford and Barnett shales in 2007. In 2007, the USGS assessed the oil resource potential of the shales, said Andrea Cicero, a geologist with the survey's Central Energy Resources Science Center and a member of the Permian Basin Province Assessment Team that conducted the assessment. At the time, she told the Reporter Telegram there were only a handful of wells producing from the two reservoirs. Quote, initial activity in the Toya Field region proved that the Barnett and Woodford shales were viable sources of gas, but there were other formations that were shallower and more prospective to pursue first, such as the Wolfcamp, she said. With the success of horizontal drilling and hydraulic fracturing in the Alpine High Field starting around 2015, industry took notice and began exploring for Woodford and Barnett in other areas, such as the Central Basin Platform, and most recently, the Midland Basin, she continued. The additional well and production data that became available since 2007 informed the survey's geologic analysis, resulting in defining new assessment units and ultimately updating its estimates for total undiscovered resources. Quote, there's still a lot of Wolfcamp and Bone Spring to be drilled, she said, noting that operators tend to explore shallower depths first. The organic-rich shales of the Woodford and Barnett occur up to 20,000 feet below the surface at greater depths than other resources in the Permian. Since production began in the late 1990s, the Woodford and Barnett shales have produced 26 million barrels of oil, equal to one day's U.S. consumption. For the study, the USGS defined 9 total assessment units, or AUs, 4 continuous AUs, and 1 conventional AU for the Woodford Shale, and 4 continuous AUs for the Barnett Shale. Quote, my analysis is strictly geological, an assessment of what is likely present and technically recoverable today. Industry needs to make the hard judgment of where to explore first. As Permian Basin operators look to expand their inventory, this assessment provides a better understanding of the total amount of undiscovered resources that remain in the Woodford and Barnett shales, Cicero said. Independence Power becomes public reporting company after merger. The story was written by Mella McEwen, oil editor. Independence Power Holdings Incorporated this week transitioned to a public reporting company following the successful completion of its business combination with Tri-Unity Business Services Limited. With the transition complete, the company will focus on addressing the critical energy gap in the Permian Basin. Independence Power deploys behind-the-meter microgrids in the form of battery energy storage systems, or BESS for short, that function as private on-site power stations. The Permian Basin is currently outgrowing its regional power grid. According to a comprehensive demand forecast conducted by S&P Global for the Texas Energy Grid Operator Energy Reliability Council of Texas, the Permian Basin is currently grappling with a power shortfall of 8 to 13 gigawatts. This gap creates what's called dirty power, voltage sags and surges that frequently crash industrial computers and damage high-value equipment. With 241 megawatts of energized utility-scale batteries already under management, Independence Power's proprietary software acts as a shock absorber to stabilize power. The setup is designed to ensure the near-perfect power quality needed for both upstream oil production and high-density AI data centers co-located at the source. And because they are behind the meter, these systems bypass the 30-month interconnection delays often seen with traditional grid power. Independence's system also enables capturing natural gas produced as a byproduct of oil drilling and converting it into low-cost electricity right at the source. Founder David J. Durrett devised an asset-light business model seeking to generate high-margin recurring revenue as a power-as-a-service provider. Quote, "Our proprietary software was born in the desert to solve the most difficult power challenges in the oil patch," said Todd Parkin, chief executive officer, in a statement. "By pairing this technology with our customers' 241 megawatt battery fleet, we are providing the stable, recurring energy backbone for both oil field productivity and the AI revolution."
This is the Midland Reporter Telegram Health and Wellness for Wednesday, January 14th, 2026. STDs. At-home STD tests offer new options. Experts hope expanded testing and treatment will reduce U.S. infection rates. Washington. New options for testing and treating some of the most common sexually transmitted diseases are becoming available, a trend that experts hope will keep downward pressure on U.S. infection rates. Last year, the Food and Drug Administration approved the first at-home test that can detect three common infections in women: gonorrhea, chlamydia, and trichomoniasis, as well as the first home-based kit for the virus that causes cervical cancer. The agency ended the year by approving two different drugs for gonorrhea, the first new options for the disease in decades. It's positive news after cases of sexually transmitted infections reached alarming highs before and during the COVID-19 pandemic, which disrupted screening, education, and treatment for sexual health nationwide. But the pandemic years also brought positive developments for testing. The same technology used for the first over-the-counter coronavirus test is now being translated into home-based kits for syphilis and other sexually transmitted infections. Previously, the FDA had mostly limited the use of such tests to health professionals. Quote, "Sexual health can be stigmatized and people can be hesitant about testing," end quote, said Dr. Ina Park, a sexual health specialist at the University of California, San Francisco. Quote, "Now we have a lot of options for patients who may be wary of going into a provider's office," end quote. New tests offer convenience, quicker turnaround times. Testing company Visby Medical launched its 3-in-1 test for women last year, following FDA approval in March. The urine-based test includes a vaginal testing swab and a small electronic device that develops the results and sends them to an online app for review. The test, which costs $150, also includes a telehealth consultation with a medical provider who can discuss the results and prescribe antibiotics or other medication if needed. The entire process, from buying the test to getting a prescription, can take as little as 6 hours, compared with several days under the traditional testing model, says Dr. Gary Skulnick, Visby's chief medical officer. Previously, a nurse or doctor would have to collect a sample, send it out to a lab, get the results, and then schedule a follow-up appointment to discuss the results. Quote, "Many patients are very hard to track down, and a lot of them, if they have a positive test result, are never treated and are lost to follow-up," end quote, said Skulnick, who is also a professor emeritus at Stanford Medical School. The FDA approved Visby's test based on study results showing that it correctly detected the three infections with accuracy rates around 98% or higher. That's similar to tests performed at hospitals and health clinics. Some home-based tests still require outside input to get the results. For example, in May, the FDA approved Teal Health's testing kit for HPV, the virus that causes cervical cancer. The company's Teal wand allows women to collect their own vaginal sample, which is then placed in a tube and shipped to a laboratory for processing. Updated federal guidelines for HPV screening released earlier this month endorsed self-collection for the first time. The FDA recently approved the first new gonorrhea drugs in decades. The bacteria that causes gonorrhea has constantly evolved, developing resistance to nearly every antibiotic used to treat it. Both of the two new drugs can be taken by mouth, a major advantage over the current standard of care, an injection of the antibiotic ceftriaxone. Nuzulfink, developed through a public-private partnership, comes in granules that dissolve in water. Blujepa from GlaxoSmithKline is a tablet that is also approved to treat urinary tract infections. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention previously recommended another drug, oral azithromycin, alongside injectable ceftriaxone, but dropped the pill from its guidelines after signs of gonorrhea was growing resistant to it. Quote, "We were down to one class of antibiotics recommended to treat gonorrhea, and we had no other good options," end quote, said Park. Quote, "So to have two new options in the same year is very exciting," end quote. The new tests and drugs come as STD rates are falling again. The CDC's provisional data for 2024 showed a third consecutive year of fewer gonorrhea cases, and the second year in a row of fewer adult cases of chlamydia and the most infectious forms of syphilis. Experts point to several factors behind the trend, including less sexual activity among young people, increased use of an antibiotic as a morning-after pill to prevent infections, and more at-home screening.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.